This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions.
We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now. Hello and welcome to Happier, a podcast where we talk about how to be happier. This week, we'll talk about how to deal with the fact that you can't remember an important fact about someone, like maybe their name, and about how to avoid breaking your good habits. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature. I'm in New York City, and with me is my sister, the sage, Elizabeth Kraft.
That's me, Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA. And Gretch, today I am in my new office.
Ooh.
I have moved offices.
So where are you now?
I am still on the Disney lot, but now I'm in the old animation building, which is super cool. It's, you know, where people actually drew all these iconic cartoons. And the show I've been working on, The Family, is wrapped up for the season, and it debuts soon on in early March. And of course, I'll be plugging that. But meanwhile, Sarah and I are in a new office. We've got our treadmill desks all set up and our whiteboards, and we're just working on developing shows right now. And then we'll know more about what we're doing, you know, soon.
So what's the coolest thing about the Disney lot? Is there some like statue or like secret thing or like Cinderella's glass slipper somewhere?
A building that has the huge sort of statues carved into it of the seven dwarves holding up the roof of the building. It's very cool.
Oh,
you know what? I'll send you a picture.
Oh yeah, we'll post it on the in the show notes for this. So happiercast.com/51, and we'll see that. But Elizabeth, you know, before we get started, I also wanted to say we got such an amazing response to our discussion of the Sunday blues, or the Sunday dreads, as Laura called them, in episode 48.
Yeah, we talked about how a lot of people just have that horrible feeling on Sundays. And a lot of people wrote in relating to that and with some great solutions.
Yeah, yeah. It was interesting that people had come up with so many ingenious approaches to battle the Sunday blues.
Yeah, some of the things we talked about were like, watching your favorite show on Sunday, scheduling something to look forward to. A great idea that came out of our discussion was do something for someone else.
Yeah, that was Sarah's idea. Yeah.
I love that. But Carla wrote in that what she does is she schedules a big complex project for over the weekend. For instance, she refinished a set of cabinets.
Yeah. And she sent up some great photos of the cabinets. And I can see this because it's like you got something really huge done. You'd feel like, oh, wow, I really spent my time well. That would help you battle the Sunday blues.
Yeah. It seems like something an upholder might do. Just a guess. I don't know what Carla is. I don't know her tendency. There's also Colette wrote in and she said, my Sunday blues come not from dreading the week, but from beating myself up for not being more productive with my free time. I would spend Sunday afternoon just running down the list of chores or tasks I should have done. By the end of the day, I felt like a lazy loser. Now that I've banished the word should, I feel so much better, and I actually get things on my it would be nice if I did list done.
Oh, that's smart. And they're sort of related because they're about like the productivity of the weekend. And then Kirsten wrote in, and she had several good ideas that sort of picked up on other ideas. One was, on Friday before she leaves work, she makes notes of what she needs to do for Monday morning and what she did in the week. And so that helps her start her Monday smoothly, and then it's less stressful to go back on Monday, and then Sundays are less full of dread. She also tries to do laundry and other chores on Saturday, so Sunday can just be a fun day. Like, her family goes out to brunch, or they make a fun meal for dinner, and so Sunday is fun day. She picks out her Monday outfit and packs lunch and gets everything together before she goes to sleep, so that it's more fun to plan her outfit on Sunday rather than half asleep Monday morning. And here's a really nice thing, and it picks up what Sarah said about doing something nice for someone else. She calls her grandmother every Sunday afternoon. Her grandmother's 85 and doesn't get that many calls, and so really, really appreciates getting a phone call. She loves talking to her grandmother, and so it's like a nice thing to do for someone else, and that makes the day nicer for her and helps battle the Sunday blues. So this is a ton of great suggestions.
Yeah, it's great to get so many ideas. It's a problem we can all help each other with.
Yeah, absolutely. So Elizabeth, this week our Try This at Home tip is to disguise your faulty memory. You know, how to handle it if you can't remember something important about someone. You must deal with this all the time. I mean, Hollywood, isn't it all about like who you know and who you have a relationship to and like who you can talk to at the party and all that? I mean, how do you handle that?
Yeah, I mean, we are constantly meeting people. It's like part of our job is to just go out and have meetings all the time. And yeah, remembering people's names is definitely sort of, you know, part of the job.
Okay, good. Well, I have some tips. I bet you've got some tips. So let's trade ideas here, because I definitely need some more strategies to handle this, because I do not have a great memory for names. And it's particularly bad if you know you should. There's a point at which you really should know someone's name and you don't know it. So here's one thing that I found works really well, which I call my tip of the tongue dodge, which is I will say to someone like, oh my gosh, I keep wanting to call you Lisa. I know that is not right. And so it's sort of like because you're almost there, you know, like you're being blocked. And everybody, I think, has that feeling of like one fact blocks another fact, even though you know the fact is wrong. And so I think it's easier than just being like, I'm sorry, I don't remember your name.
Yeah, that's good.
So that's one of my dodges. Do you have any dodges?
Well, what I do is if I'm with somebody else and we're like walking into a situation where I know I should know people's names, but I might not, I say to the person I'm with, okay, if I don't introduce you to someone, that means I don't know their name. So introduce yourself so they'll say their name.
That really does work like a charm, but you have to have the Confederate.
Yes, that's the problem. You need the wingman in that. The other thing that I do, which I think a lot of people do, is I over introduce myself. I might introduce myself to someone who I know really well, it's like, I'll just assume, even if I know their name, I'll just assume they don't know my name.
Yeah.
And, that way I'm just kind of in that habit. And it seems normal to me to do that.
Well, I think that's polite, because it helps other people if they can't remember your name. So it's nice. And I also feel like if you say your name, the other person says their name, even if it's sort of like we should know each other's name, they can be like, of course. And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Like, oh, we both know all this, you know, it's another.
Yeah, well, because so often it's about context.
Yes.
Like if you see someone I've had a meeting with someone, an hour long meeting, and then seen them that night out at a pizza place and had no idea who they were, because it's just a different context. If someone's with their kid, I don't think like, oh, she's the woman I met with, you know, at the studio today.
Yeah.
Can I tell you what they did at Jack's school, which I thought was so great?
Ooh, what?
Is, so for all the kindergarten parents, they made placemats that have the parents' picture with their names on it, as well as the child's name. So you can constantly refer back to the placemat. And parents have told me that they took a picture of the placemat on their phone, so that if they're at an event at school and they don't remember someone's name, they can just pop up the placemat and actually search it on the phone, you know, in the moment.
That is brilliant.
Which is so smart.
Yeah, because once you remember, you're like, oh yeah, of course. But I have something that's as good as a placemat in my phone, which is that Jamie, my husband has this like crazy encyclopedic memory for everybody he has ever met. He will do things to me like, didn't you go to college with that guy? And I'm like, I've never seen that guy before in my life. And then I'm like, wait a minute, I did go to college with that guy. How do you remember? Or he'll see somebody's picture in the newspaper and he will recognize them on the street. Like, I could never do that. And it's funny because it turns out that like in ancient Rome, there was a kind of slave whose job it was to remember names and socially important information about people, like for the emperor or whatever. Like, there's somebody who would stand behind you and be like, oh, yeah, that's, you know, Marcus Aurelius or whatever. That's called it was a nomenclator. So Jamie's like my own personal nomenclator, but it's made me kind of lazy. And so now when I go to events without him, I'm like, dang, I can't remember anybody's name.
Yeah, I also think it helps if you get busted and you just don't remember the name. Just like say what I'm such an idiot. I'm so embarrassed. I didn't remember your name. You know, and the thing is, we've all done it. In, you know, as Jamie's phrase, we've all done it. This is something almost everybody deals with. So I think people are pretty forgiving about it.
Yeah. Or they should be, because it really is, a lot of times it's not because you're not important, or it's just because you're out of context, or you remind them of somebody else in the past, or whatever it is. We all have a lot of information.
I will say, though, if you do remember someone's name, it makes a huge impression.
Yes.
And I think it is, you do score major points when you remember someone's name. No doubt about it.
It's a very nice thing to aim for. It is. It truly is. So listen, we've talked about how to handle when you don't know someone's name, but like, do you have any other good strategies for if like there's other information you can't, like you just like can't remember something important about somebody that you should know by now?
Yeah, well, there's something that comes up too about like, if you don't remember exactly what someone does for a living or where they work, but you just can't quite remember, you just say, what are you working on these days? And that could just be sort of, you know, regarding any project they've got going on, not necessarily, you know, the name of the company.
Yeah. And Elizabeth, I have something that I use that's sort of a kind of a version of that, which is when I can't remember if someone's working or not. Like, I don't want to say, what are you working on? Because I don't know what their job situation is at all. You know, I say, so I make it even more open-ended. And so I say, what's keeping you busy these days? And so that way, like, a person can pick any aspect of their life. You know, it could be, oh, I've been doing a lot of, you know, hiking lately. Or and it kind of lets them steer the conversation anywhere they want. Which sometimes is nice because you don't want to feel like people have to talk about one aspect of their life, which they may or may not feel like dwelling on at that time.
Yes, it could be a sensitive subject and you don't even realize it. That's a great idea.
Right.
You know, the other thing, Gretch, is if you get through a conversation and you haven't managed yet to figure out who this person is and how you know them, you can always ask for a card at the end of the conversation. Uh-huh. And then at least, you know, after the fact, and then hopefully it'll be imprinted for next time.
Well, and it's a sign of respect because it's like, oh, I want your information. I want your card. But I wish, like the placemat, I wish that everybody's business card had their photo on it. Some do, but I think I wish everybody did, because that is so great. And here's something that I do, and it doesn't work in every situation, but sometimes it works. And this is like goes to the context thing you were talking about, is if I say to somebody, remind me, how did we meet? Sometimes that's high risk, because it's like we met because our kids, you know, it seems too obvious. But it's a way that if there's somebody who's sort of been in your life a long time, and a lot of times people are like, oh, remember we met at that dinner party or whatever, and then it all comes, you know, flooding back to me. And if they remember, or if they say like, oh, I really don't remember, then you can just talk about that. It's just, it's a helpful way to get out more information.
Yeah. One thing I do is, because usually once I've placed someone, then every detail about their life comes flooding back. So if they go, oh, I'm Joyce, you know, and you go, oh yeah, then I'll sort of overcompensate or compensate by saying, oh, that's right, how was your trip to France?
Oh right. Ooh, you know, show off.
So that you show that you remember them, and that sort of ameliorates the fact that you didn't remember their name automatically.
So let us know if you have figured out any kind of cool dodges or strategies or tricks for disguising a faulty memory, and how you've applied them, how it works for you. Because I think we could all use a little, like some pointers here. Let us know on Twitter, Facebook, podcast at GretchenRubin.com is our email. Or as always, you can go to the show notes for this episode, which is happiercast.com/51. You can add your comments there.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. So, Elizabeth, next up, it's our Better Than Before habit strategy. And this week, it's the strategy of safeguards. In my book, Better Than Before, I talk about the 21 strategies that we can use to make or break our habits. And one of the most important strategy is the strategy of safeguards, which is about safeguarding yourself against breaking a habit.
Okay, that's interesting. I could have used this, I guess, when we were in San Francisco and I broke my good eating habits.
Yes. Well, this is about figuring out how to stop yourself from getting into that situation. And it really is about planning to fail. And it can sound fatalistic. And I think sometimes people don't want to think about safeguards because they're full of enthusiasm and full of confidence. And they're like, I'm 100% committed to my new way of eating. Like, I don't even need to think about what's going to happen if I break my habit because I'm just not going to. But the fact is, although it can sound kind of fatalistic to think through all of the problems that might arise and how you might stumble, it's really important.
Yeah, that's something they do at Jenny Craig every week. They say, you know, what challenges might you be facing this week?
Well, and that is the key thing about the strategy of safeguards. What you want to do is you want to anticipate temptation or, you know, anticipate roadblocks, and so that you can minimize temptation both in your environment, you know, in your own mind, which is things like, you know, when I'm at work, I'm not even going to walk into the writer's kitchen because there's so much there that's going to tempt me. I'm just like not even going to cross the threshold. So you're minimizing temptation. And then you also have a plan in advance for something like, well, what's going to happen when I go on vacation? What's going to happen on my birthday? What's going to happen when I go to the holiday party? What's going to happen if I get sick? What's going to happen in any kind of situation that might arise where I can anticipate that I might feel a desire to break my good habit?
So you put in these safeguards. That's like what would one be?
Well, what's good to do, you want to have this plan. As Dwight Eisenhower said, plans are worthless, but planning is everything. So you want to have what are called if-then plans. So if I walk into the hotel room restaurant for breakfast and I can choose between a buffet or ordering off the menu, then I will order off the menu because then I know exactly what I'm going to get and exactly the portions that I'm going to get. Because I know if I go to the buffet, I end up taking everything and eating a lot because I feel like I'm getting my money's worth. You know, that's an if-then plan.
You know what? This just happened to me this week, Gretchen. We had a mom's night out. Kindergarten. We went to a screening of a movie because one of the moms was able to arrange that.
So LA.
I know, so LA,
right?
Yeah. And so we were all meeting an hour before for a drink, and then it was the movie. And I, being on my diet, I said to myself, okay, if I go to this, I am not going to have a glass of wine. I'm going to have a Diet Coke because I'm doing Jenny Craig and I'm watching the calories. And I went to the bar. I got my Diet Coke. Everybody else was having wine, but I was like, I'm having my Diet Coke. Plan accomplished. What I didn't think about, though, was then after the movie, it was like, okay, let's go to this restaurant. And because I hadn't sort of steeled myself, I ended up ordering a glass of wine.
There.
Yeah, because it was like, oh, new situation. I wasn't ready for it. And I just sort of had a moment of weakness.
Yeah. Well, no, a friend of mine was saying how she'd gone to a restaurant and she was like, had everything like, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get that, I'm going to get this. And she goes, and then they brought out like, you know, and compliments of the chef. There is this blah, blah. And she's like, well, I had no plan for that. Yeah. And so Yeah. But so an important thing to say, too, about safeguards is, like, you don't want to beat yourself up when you slip up, because, you know, we've all done it. And what is fascinating, what the research shows, is that sometimes people feel like if they're really, really hard on themselves, like, oh, if you were really kicking yourself and feeling really angry or guilty with yourself for the fact that you'd had that glass of wine, sometimes people think that that is going to help them stick to their good habits going forward, like if they're really hard on themselves. But what it turns out is the case is that people who show compassion for themselves and cut themselves a little bit of slack tend to do a better job overall. They're the ones that tend to get back in the saddle more easily. If they say to themselves, like, well, we've all done it, or, well, I learned that lesson, you know, like, well, I figured out, you know, I got a plan for, you know, the after, you know, both stages of the mom's night out. Or, you know, I know how I can do it better next time. People tend to then be able to get back into the habit of the good habit more easily. And so, you know, obviously we want to do a good job, but, you know, it's hard and things come up. So we want to be, like, not too hard on this. And it's weird with the safeguards, because on the one hand, you don't want to slip up at all, because that's how you build the good habit, is just, you know, sticking to it. But on the other hand, you don't want to be too hard on yourself when you do have a stumble.
I also think it's a matter of being honest with yourself, because I think a lot of times, not you, but others of us we want to break our good habits.
Well, that's the strategy of loophole spotting, which is coming up the next time that we're talking about a Better Than Before Habit strategy, which is how to avoid those loopholes. Like you say, that we're, like, constantly looking for a way out, you know, a justification for a way out.
I know. And you are the master of not breaking your habits.
But I mean, yeah. I still struggle. I think that you think that I do a better job than I do. Maybe because I talk about them all the time. But no, I mean, I think it's hard for everyone. And I really do think that if-then planning helps. Because if you're like, you know, if I go on a trip, then these are the snacks that I'm going to eat. Or if I, you know, just whatever it is, you just plan ahead.
If I go to a business lunch, which is a big thing for me, like, it's great when I can just eat in my office and have Jenny Craig. But if I'm meeting someone for lunch, you know, I can't bring my, you know, frozen spaghetti and meatballs and ask the restaurant to heat it up. So it's like knowing in advance, like looking at the menu in advance and saying, okay, this is what I'm ordering.
Yeah. Safeguards really do make a difference. Planning ahead really can help us stick to our good habits.
All right, Gretch, it's time for our listener question. And remember, and one way to reach us is to leave a voicemail question at 774-277-9336. Or catchier 77happy336.
Hi, this is Terry calling from Walnut Creek. I'm calling about phone calls, keeping up with relationships with, say, like my mom or my mother-in-law. I find that I have trouble answering their calls. I'm usually taking the kids somewhere, and I get overwhelmed, and I'm just wondering what's the best way to handle that, if I should just answer the call right away or try to call back when it's a little quieter and more convenient. I'm an obliger, and I usually have to concentrate and kind of think about what they're asking of me before I commit. So a lot of times I'll avoid the conversation to a time when I think I'll be able to handle it better, but then I generally don't get to responding, and then I have these voicemails that I have to keep up with. So anyway, I would love some advice. Thanks so much for your show. Bye-bye.
It's such an interesting question. I mean, I think we all know that feeling of, like, I've got to listen to this message, and or I've got to take this call at a time when I feel like my attention is really being preoccupied somewhere else, and then, like, I got to get back, and it all mounts up, and I sure know that feeling.
Yeah. I mean, my big advice for this is using texting and emailing to your advantage, because one thing you can do is just text someone. So if you've seen someone's left you a voicemail, even if you can't face listening to it, which for some reason, as you just said, a lot of us do not want to listen to voicemails. We've discussed that. You can text or email and say, hey, I saw you called. You know, I was dropping the kids off. Let me try you tonight. Or if you don't even want the responsibility of calling, say, call, you know, give me a try tomorrow.
Or you could even, I mean, like, I much prefer to have to do anything transactional in writing. And so if it's, because she, it sounds like from what Terry's saying, these aren't just like sort of general catch-ups, like when I call mom and dad and then we're just sort of like kind of catching up. It sounds like these are about something that needs to get done. For me, so maybe what I would say something like, oh, I'm sorry, I missed your call. I was dropping the kids off. What's up? You know, what do you need? And then move it to email. And one thing I've noticed is that, and again, this is might be the kind of thing that would be a little bit harder for an obliger, is as an obliger, you feel like, okay, they want to talk on the phone. I need to call them back. But maybe you need to train them. Yeah, it's not so easy to reach me on the phone. You're going to have a much better response if you connect with me by email. Or you can call me if you don't want to email me, but I'm going to email you back. Because a lot of times, once you get in the practice of something, people get it. Like I have people that I know will only answer. My roommate from college only communicates by text. If I send her an email, she does not respond. A text, she answers right away. This drives me crazy because I like to use all my fingers when I type. I don't like to type with my thumbs. But it's like if I email her, she will not answer me. She's trained me. If you want to reach me, text me. And then there are other people who never check, you know, like they don't even get text, you know. And so
mom and dad.
Well, they sort of do now, but like they would much prefer. And you're going to reach them much more quickly if you use email. And so I think we're all sort of attuned to each other. And I think, you know, maybe some people who are really used to using the phone, their impulse is to pick up the phone and call you whenever the impulse strikes them. And so maybe you need to, and because the nice thing about email and stuff is it's on your terms. Like you send it when it's on your terms. And then if they respond to you, then you respond on your terms. And again, she's sort of saying like maybe sometimes she wants to think about how she wants to respond, whether she's going to meet whatever is expected of her. And so that's good to have that time delay. Or maybe she even wants to talk to somebody else like, ooh, someone's suggesting that we do this. What do you think? Do I have to say yet? Because sometimes an obliger needs somebody to give them a little like, hey, you don't have to do that. Or that sounds like a big thing for me. Or maybe that can wait or whatever that might be.
Yeah, the only thing I would say is that you do want to make sure you don't get in the habit of never talking to loved ones, because that can happen. And you want to make sure you do maintain the actual voice-to-voice communication. But if it's just about housekeeping matters,
yeah,
it's not so important.
Or logistical things. And I think also you don't want to get into the habit of like every time you talk to somebody, it's about something unpleasant, you know? Some duty. And one thing I do is I send photos all the time because I feel like that's a little snapshot of like what's going on. And then it sort of keeps people up to date on what's going on in our lives, but it doesn't call for a response because it's just like a picture of like Barnaby in the snow or whatever. And it's just like, here it is, you know, for what it's worth. And so then it's a little pleasant connection.
And people love getting pictures. I love it when I see I have a picture to look at. It's just something about seeing a picture is very satisfying.
I know. I wish you would send more pictures. I love it when you send pictures.
Okay, I'll send more pictures.
Send more pictures. I love your pictures. But I think Terry is raising a question that is an issue for a lot of people, which is, you know, how do we keep up with responding to people who are important with us without letting it become overwhelming and a big drag?
Yes.
There are some stories from our mother's life that I love to hear about. I love hearing about how she played with a tin dollhouse when she was a girl. And just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for our families forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother and mother figures for years to come. And it makes a wonderful keepsake book so you never, never lose these wonderful stories and memories.
Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, like, what was your favorite toy as a little girl, or what was your first job? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/happier. That's storyworth.com/happier to save $10 on your first purchase.
All right, now it's time for Demerit and Gold Stars. And Elizabeth, you are the demerit this week.
All right, Gretch, you're going to probably laugh at this. So you remember many episodes ago, we went through the whole saga of my phone dying and I lost all my pictures. And
oh, you were going to take it to that place where they could do like extreme emergency surgery. Did
yes,
they resurrect it?
Yes, no, I haven't gone there. So that's one. I still have the phone just on the counter waiting to go to the emergency place. But worse than that is so I have my new phone with all my new pictures and I have not backed them up. And you get a certain amount free of the iCloud when you get a phone. That sort of automatically happens. But if you don't then sign up, it all goes away and the backup is gone. And that's where I am. So I am currently, once again, without any backup, just hoping that nothing happens to my phone.
Now, I have to confess, my phone is not backed up. We've got to deal with this.
Not.
We've got to back this up. Unless magically it's been set up to back up. See, because I have an IT guy who helps me with my files, and I have an elaborate backup program for my files. And then also, like when I work on my laptop, it has to sync up with my desktop so that whatever version I'm working on is most up to date, and that backs up. And I might have asked him to somehow back up my phone, but I don't know for sure. Okay, so we're both terrified. We're both living on the edge.
Yes.
Do you know how to back up your phone?
No. I mean, I'm sure if I thought about it, I would. I think it involves like plugging it into the computer, and that's probably like almost all you have to do.
But so doesn't Adam knows how to do this, doesn't he?
He's super techie. Backs his stuff up constantly. And I could probably just turn my head and go, hey, will you back up my phone? And he would do it.
Yeah.
That's perhaps something I should try this evening.
See, because I'm not an Apple. I don't have an Apple computer. I think if you have an Apple laptop or computer, it's much easier. See, this is like the two of us talking. We know nothing. So please help us out, listeners, because clearly like many people will be like laughing hysterically that we are puzzled. But I don't have an Apple. And so and I'm afraid if I like back it up on like Eliza's computer that I will somehow wipe out her backup because she's backing up, I'm sure, with my backup. I don't know. So
it's
all very mysterious. But I think you're actually in a better position than I am because you could just make Adam do it. Jamie won't know how to do it either. So, okay.
I'm going to do that, and I'll update you when I've done that.
Okay, well, and I'm going to hold you accountable. So, like, next update coming up, it's like, what's up with your phone?
Okay, I'll do something. Now, okay.
And I will too, right?
Yeah, and you too.
Because I'm scared. Okay.
What, Gretch, is your gold star this week?
So this is a gold star for this thing that I've been hearing about, and I'm so intrigued by, and I'm definitely going to do it myself, which is the craze of adult coloring books. And this is, I became aware of this. First of all, when I would walk into bookstores, I would see all these adult coloring books all over the place. And then also, I have to confess that more than the average person, I obsessively look at bestseller lists of books to see what books are on the bestseller list. And if you look on those lists, they're dominated by adult coloring books. And I just think this is brilliant for a couple of reasons. One is, if you're an adult and you don't know what to do for pleasure, a great thing to ask yourself is, what did you do for fun when you were 10 years old? Because that's probably something that you would enjoy now. And I loved coloring. I had very elaborate coloring books, and I used them like well into my teens. And so I'm very excited to get my first coloring book and start coloring. Also, I am a crazy fan of all office supplies, and I'm super excited that if I like doing this, it's a great excuse to go out and buy myself a super fancy set of markers, which I'm always looking for an excuse to buy markers. So I will get to do that and use them because I don't want to just buy them and not use them. That's depressing. And also, you know, there's something very soothing about, like, this is the kind of thing where if you're feeling overwhelmed or anxious, doing something like coloring, it's like it takes a little bit of brain, but not that much. And it's repetitive and it's soothing and it's doing something with your hands. I think there's really something special about doing something with your hands. It's not hard. Like, I can't needlepoint. It was like too hard for me, but I love the idea of doing something. It keeps your hands busy. Like, if you're a person who tends to like snack while you watch TV or something, this is a great thing to do, because if you're working on your beautiful picture, you don't want to be sticking your hand into a bag of chips or something, because it's just messy.
Yeah, well, you know, they're huge in LA. Sarah's all over the adult coloring
she
books.
Is
oh, well, yes, absolutely. And people even do them in the writer's room, because it's the kind of thing that, you know, you, again, you can still focus on the conversation, but it's something you can do, you know, just sort of throughout the day.
Well, you know, that's interesting that you say that, because I'm a big hair twister. And one of the things they say about twisting your hair is that that kind of movement actually helps you concentrate, because it's like your body is focused on one movement. So then your brain can kind of, it kind of quiets everything down so your brain can pay attention. And I think coloring would be very much the same way, where it's like, it's like doodling or something, where you're doing something kind of at a very, very low level. And yet it's satisfying, because it's satisfying to be like, oh, look, I colored in, I finished my picture or something. So I'm gonna email Sarah and ask her, like, what's the best adult coloring book that I should try, and get her recommendation. And anybody else who's got a great recommendation of some great adult coloring book, or a kid's coloring book. I mean, I'll color any coloring book. because I want to give it a shot.
I've got a lot of them at home.
Yeah, like the kids ones. Star Wars dominated coloring books. I mean,
yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Actually, Jack and I can swap. So that's my gold star for the week. And that's it for this episode of Happier. Remember to try this at home. Disguise your faulty memory. Let us know if you tried some of our tips and strategies, and please let us know what tips and strategies work for you, because we definitely need more.
Oh, and Gretchen, we want to give a shout out to Susan Kane, friend of yours, and I'm a fan of hers, who just has a new podcast that started last week on the Panoply Network called Quiet.
Yeah, Susan is somebody I've known for a long time. And of course, she's incredibly well known for her book called Quiet, which is all about the power of introverts. And for so many people, and I've talked to many people like this, it was just a revelation to understand themselves better, to understand other people better, understanding how introverts and extroverts might see the world differently.
Yeah. And the podcast is really interesting, because it focuses on people who are parents of introverted children. It's like, how to parent an introverted child to, you know, reach their best and live their best life. And so it's really a great tool. And it's just interesting in terms of human nature for adults as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So check it out. It's called Quiet, and you can find it at iTunes.com/Quiet.
Thanks to our producer, Henry Malofsky. Also, thanks to Andy Bowers and Laura Mayer from Panoply. Get in touch. Gretchen's on Twitter at Gretchen Rubin, and I'm at Elizabeth Kraft. Our email address is podcast@gretchenrubin.com.
Now, when Terry called in, you might have heard her mention that she's an obliger. And here on the podcast, we talk a lot about the four tendencies. If you want to learn more about that personality framework and figure out your own tendency, you can take the online quiz at happiercast.com/quiz.
Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward.